I want to thank again Rue and David for putting in this fan. Boy, it is really nice up here now. Someone thought I may end up preaching for hours. I'm so comfortable up here. And that may happen. You never know. I think we're blessed to have the book of Malachi, aren't we? Last book in the Old Testament. Recall the Jews that came back from Babylonian captivity. They had rebuilt the temple. And while it was nothing in comparison to Solomon's temple, it was still a magnificent structure. And so temple worship had been reinstated. The priesthood had got back into ministering like they had before the captivity. And so about 100 years have passed between the time the people have came back from Babylonian captivity and when Malachi begins his last message there before the Old Testament closes. And during that 100 years, at first the people seem to really get into their worship and be involved in it and be concerned about it. But over time, they had become somewhat lax, somewhat apathetic, somewhat uncaring. And by the time that Malachi comes on the scene, and remember that Ezra and Nehemiah and Malachi are pretty much all contemporary, writing about the same type of things, and we'll see that tonight, especially with Ezra's book. But some problems had started creeping into their worship. Malachi had already mentioned that some of the individuals there would, instead of bringing the very best of the flock, the herd, without blemish, they were bringing the leftovers, the seconds, the culls. And that's what they were offering to God. And God said, "Do you think I'm going to accept that?" And of course, the answer, it was a rhetorical question. The answer was no. God says, "I'm not going to accept that type of offering and sacrifice. Don't even bother bringing it. You keep it yourself." He says the governor of the land wouldn't accept it. He says, "I'm certainly not going to." He says, "I only take the best." Another problem had arisen over time, and that's the one we see tonight in Malachi chapter 2, beginning in verse 10. Through the rest of the chapter, we see another problem with the people's lives. They were still worshiping. They were still bringing sacrifices. They were still observing the Sabbath, coming to the temple. But there was a very serious problem in their personal lives that Malachi addresses beginning in verse 10. Let's see what it is. Malachi chapter 2, verse 10. We'll read 10 and 11 together. If I can get to Malachi, headed the wrong book. Malachi chapter 2, verse 10. "Have we not all one Father? Has not one God created us? Why do we deal treacherously with one another? By profaning the covenant of the fathers." Here's the problem in general terms. They were dealing, some of the individuals, some of the Israelites, the Jews were being treacherous or were dealing treacherously with one another. If you would look that book up, especially how it's used in the Old Testament, the word means deceitfully or hypocritically. That's what it means to deal treacherously with people. And because they were doing that, they were profaning the covenant of the fathers. They were profaning the covenant. They were polluting it. They were corrupting it. But specifically, this is how they were doing it. "Judah has dealt treacherously, and abomination has been committed in Israel and Jerusalem." What is it? "For Judah has profaned the Lord's holy institution, which he loves. He has married the daughter of a foreign god." This was the particular profanity that they were practicing. Now, they hadn't stopped worshiping. They hadn't stopped bringing the sacrifices. But those individuals who were bringing sacrifices to the temple to offer them there on that altar, they had left their wives, their Jewish wives, the wives they were supposed to have. They had left them, got rid of them, and had went to the surrounding countries and married wives that worshiped idols and pagan gods. Something specifically they had been told all the way back in the days of Moses to never, ever do under any circumstances. Now, this was not a gray area. This wasn't some issue that wasn't very important. This wasn't one of those areas that was hard to understand. God had specifically told them this. They could not have misunderstood His words. So it wasn't a matter of ignorance. It wasn't a matter of misunderstanding. It was simply a matter of rebellion. They chose to do this, knowing that it was wrong. We go back to Exodus chapter 34. We'll see about this covenant. In particular, let's look at verses 15 and 16. Exodus 34, verses 15 and 16. This is a warning the people were given by God through Moses. And in verses 15 and 16, right after he talks about you shall worship no other god, he says, lest you make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land, and they play the harlot with their gods and make sacrifice to their gods, and one of them invites you, and you eat of his sacrifice, and you take of his daughters for your sons, and his daughters play the harlot with their gods, and make your sons play the harlot with their gods. He says, that's what you need to stay away from. Under no circumstances allow your sons or daughters to marry these pagan people, because they will make your sons and daughters play the harlot, be an adulterer or an adulteress spiritually with those gods. They would marry, in some sense, those gods. He says, if you do that, Malachi does, that's an abomination. That's the word Malachi uses. He says, it's an abomination. These people would be destroying holiness. When you take something holy, like the Jewish religion, the Jewish people were to be to God, and you take that and you unite that with something unholy, profane, corrupted, like these pagan religions, what you do is you don't make the unholy holy, you make the holy unholy. And that's why he says you must stay away from, at all cost, these unions with these pagan women. He wanted them to be a holy nation. I mentioned how Ezra was a contemporary and mentioned some of the very same things. In Ezra chapter 9, verse 2, Ezra mentions almost the exact same thing that Malachi mentions in Malachi 2. Notice Ezra chapter 9, and we'll just read verse 2. Ezra chapter 9, verse 2. This, of course, is the same time period, pretty much, maybe slightly before Malachi, but not too much before Malachi. And so Ezra says, for they have taken some of their daughters as wives for themselves, referring to these pagan nations around them, like the Hittites and the Jebusites, Ammonites, Moabites, Egyptians, Amorites, all worship pagan gods. None of them worship Jehovah. And their sons, the holy seed is mixed with the peoples of those lands. The holy seed. The Messiah had to come through these people, didn't he? He was going to be born of Jewish parents. It's God's plan. And if these people mix their holy seed with the unholy seed of those nations around them, then the Messiah couldn't come through God's people. It wouldn't be holy anymore. So he says, that's what's going to happen. You're going to mix it with the peoples of those lands. Indeed, the hand of the leaders and rulers has been foremost in this trespass. So it wasn't like the rulers and the leaders were trying to keep the people from committing these abominations. The rulers and the leaders were actually in front of and pushing the people to have this done. They were the ones that were doing it themselves. They should have been the ones more than anybody that knew better, and yet they were right there involved in all of it. And this is what he says is going to happen. Malachi 2, verse 12. May the Lord cut off from the tents of Jacob the man who does this, being awake and aware, yet who brings an offering to the Lord of hosts. See, they were still bringing offerings. They were still doing this. He says they're going to be cut off. They're going to lose everything if they continue to do this. And what was worse, they were pretending it was fine. They knew better. They knew they were not supposed to be marrying these women. But they were pretending that everything was just fine. That there was no problem. So they just pretended like they were just as righteous as anybody else. And yet they knew what they were doing was wrong. You would think by the time of Christ, people would have changed. Oh, they didn't. Matthew chapter 23, notice verse 14. Matthew 23, verse 14. Of course, this is Jesus' accusations about the Pharisees, a particular group of the Jews. In Matthew 23, verse 14. Jesus says, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers, therefore you will receive greater condemnation." See the fact, the Pharisees were very religious. They worshipped. They made offerings and sacrifices, but at the same time, they were pretenders, he says. You're pretending to be righteous. You're not really righteous. Jesus says, "I know what you're like on the inside." As he later says in that same chapter, it's as if you're full of dead men's bones. He says, "I know what you're like." So the people back in Malachi's day, when they were going there into the sanctuary, into the temple, to lay their sacrifices there on the altar, give them to the priest to have them cut up or burnt, whatever kind of sacrifice it was, they were at the same time living terribly immoral lives. Their lives were just a great big lie. That's what Malachi is saying. You're just pretending. He says, you're not real. You're not a real Jew. You're not doing these things for the right reason. And of course, there's no difference today when we come on Sunday morning and partake of the Lord's Supper and you know, we're all dressed up and we sing louder than anybody else and listen intently to the sermon. Doesn't mean anything if at the same time we're living immoral, irreligious lives. See, we're guilty of the same thing that these people were guilty of 500 years before the time of Christ. So no, people don't change. The circumstances may change somewhat, but people's nature do not. That nature does not change. These people were insulting God. That was an insult. That's how God took it, as an insult. They brought the sacrifices and offerings, and they thought they were doing God a favor. They thought they were doing God a favor by being there in the temple and making sacrifices. Surely God's going to bless them if they do that, regardless of how they're living the other parts of the week. God says, uh-uh. I'm going to destroy you. That's what I'm going to do. Don't think for a minute I'm going to allow that to go on. God says, I'm not. He says, I'm going to cut you off, and you'll have absolutely nothing. And they were without excuse because they knew what was right and chose not to do it, chose to do what they wanted. Now notice verse 13. And this is the second thing you do, Malachi says, or God says through Malachi. You cover the altar of the Lord with tears, with weeping and crying, so He does not regard the offering anymore, nor receive it with goodwill from your hands. Yet you say, for what reason? Because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, with whom you have dealt treacherously, yet she is your companion and your wife by covenant. And think about how the wives felt here. It was pretty unheard of back at this time for a wife to in any way divorce her husband. It was almost always the husband that left the wife. But the idea certainly would still hold, but that's why he's particularly looking at the husbands here. And he's condemning the husbands for what they're doing to their wives by this. They've given up their wives, they've gotten rid of their wives to marry these other women, these pagan women. And their wives are figuratively anyway, putting out the fires of the altar by their tears, by their crying and their weeping and their sighing. They are just distraught because their husbands have gotten rid of them and married these foreign women. And of course, the fires of the altar, they were burning all the time. And so Malachi uses that idea because the men were bringing the sacrifices to the altar, the bulls, goats, sheep, whatever. But the women, because they had been mistreated so much, their tears were so abundant that it was like they were putting out the fires of those altars. So what did that mean? Those sacrifices meant nothing. They meant nothing. Those men could just keep on bringing them all they wanted, but God accepted not a single one of them. And of course, that same thing can happen today. I mean, we can come to every Sunday morning service, partake of the Lord's Supper every time, and just pretend to be the holiest people imaginable and make our offerings the fruit of our lips, we talked about in Hebrews 13. We can make those type of sacrifices just like they did, but if we're treating people like these people were, God doesn't accept any of it. We might as well stay home. I mean, there is absolutely no benefit whatsoever. God doesn't accept anything that comes out of us, just like those sacrifices. It's just like they were never made, because those fires were being put out, figuratively, by those tears. The women were being treated that badly. So the offering was rejected. The offering was being rejected. And of course, rejected by God because of their wicked behavior. That wicked behavior was like a barrier, like a stone wall between the people and God. And as long as they behaved sinfully and treacherously and wickedly, God wasn't going to take anything from them. Not a thing whatsoever. This certainly teaches us today that we need to honor our spouse. We need to honor our spouse and be thankful for our spouse, because it says God is a witness. Remember what we read there in verse 14? These men, remember Malachi is written kind of in a question and answer format. God, through Malachi, makes an accusation to the people, and the people come back and say, "Who, us? How do we do that? What way?" And so here the people are saying, for what reason? What reason? What reason is God not regarding our offering? And God says, the Lord has been witness. God sees everything. Yes, He sees how you act during worship, but He also sees how you act at home and how you act at work and how you act in the car and how you act everywhere, He says. And if your behavior in those situations don't line up with what God expects, then He doesn't take those offerings, those sacrifices, your worship. Doesn't mean anything to Him. So God sees everything. That's what He's making a point here. God knows what these men have done with their wives, how they've rejected their Jewish wives and have went and got other pagan wives. God says, I know that. God says, you made a covenant with not only your wife, you made a covenant with Me. God makes that point throughout the Bible, going all the way back to Genesis 3. Genesis 2, the end of Genesis 2. Because He's the one that instituted the whole concept of the home and marriage. And when two people get married, it's not just a covenant between those two people. Malachi makes this point. Malachi says, it's a covenant between you two, yes, the husband and wife, but it's also a covenant with Me. So when you treat your wife or